documentary on News Talk.
Now on documentary and drama on News Talk, Groundbreakers Series 2. This episode centres on Mary Curley, founding member and director of the Sexual Violence Centre Cork. When Mary began her work, sexual violence was a taboo subject. This traces the evolution and revolution led by women like Mary, who fought for a culture of zero tolerance for sexual violence and for the rights of the victims. This is Groundbreaker, Mary Curley. This documentary discusses sensitive subjects, including sexual violence, and is intended for a mature audience. And a warning that some listeners may find this content upsetting.
Mary Curley is a well-known figure around Cork. She's a small woman with a glint in her eye, and she always wears purple. Her nod to the suffragettes and to the campaigns to raise awareness for sexual violence. In 1983, Mary Curley helped found the Cork Rape Crisis Centre, now known as the Cork Sexual Violence Centre. When you become aware of Mary Curley and the work that she has done, you can no longer be ignorant to the reality, the cruel reality, of sexual violence in Ireland.
Like one of five girls in this country.
This is Mary Curley. This is the story of her work, her mission, to raise awareness, to keep the conversation going, so we can face head-on the reality of sexual violence in Ireland. When I ask people who have worked with Mary to share their thoughts about her, the overwhelming feeling I got was of respect and love for this groundbreaking woman. Dr. Melissa Darmody, psychologist who has been working in the field of sexual violence for over 30 years.
You know, she's always got a glint in her eye and this amazing force of nature. She's like physically a tiny woman, but you'd never describe her as that because the energy just exudes off of her.
Dr. Victoria Bufaki, senior lecturer in philosophy in University College Cork, specializing in social justice and violence.
She fought an injustice. In that sense, she's a warrior.
My God, she was like a giant back then.
This is Lavina Currick. In 1993, she was the first rape victim to waive her anonymity in Ireland.
You could count on your hand how many people stood up and talked about rape back then. And Mary was one of them.
Making us aware of an injustice is always the first step towards correcting the injustice.
In 1983, when Mary Curley helped set up the Rape Crisis Centre in Cork, as Lavina said, there was very few people who were talking about rape. Ireland was then a place where a man could legally rape his wife, where domestic violence was often treated as a time-wasting nuisance, and where any form of sexual violence was usually viewed as the woman's fault. Professor of Human Rights Law at the University of Galway and the UN Special Rapporteur on Trafficking in Person, especially women and children, Siobhan Mullally.
She has persisted and struggled and built alliances and always been ahead of her time in terms of pushing people, pushing the state, pushing authorities to recognise that sexual violence is a serious human rights violation, is a serious crime, and that we need to be much more proactive to prevent it. But it didn't just happen. It took decades of very hard work and commitment and courage to speak up to those who denied that.
And Ireland was not ready for it. The levels of resistance and abuse that she received from the institutions, from the Gardaí, and she just persevered. And now she's built something that is at the heart of the city. She built it from nothing.
There was a number of women who'd met to look at the idea of setting up a rape crisis centre in Cork, as Dublin Rape Crisis would have started in 1979. At one stage, there was a neighbour of mine. I was living in a big housing estate with my two daughters, and there was a neighbour who was involved in the setting up of it and asked me to join. Now, at that stage, I just thought, I'm really out of my depth here. I'm at home with my two daughters. I'm from Dublin originally. I didn't have any family or really any friends or anybody in Cork, and I was on my own, really didn't know what I was about, and just trying to really cope, really get through. So I remember going to a few meetings, thinking, God, I won't give myself 6 months here because I'm just overwhelmed by everything. And I really can't believe, looking back, that was 40 years ago. So we started off, and for the first 9 months, we were in the Quay Co-op. The Quay Co-op was a vegetarian restaurant, but it was also gay collective met there. It was also different action groups met there. So it was very much a political kind of centre. I think even to go into the Quay Co-op back then was nearly felt like a radical step. The Quay Co-op and the Rape Crisis Centre was raided by the Special Branch during that time. It just shows you how radical the place was seen. Nobody in the world of any kind of authority wanted us around the place because they saw us as a threat to family values. Well, what I would have heard back then by different GPs, now there was many GPs who were supportive, but quite a lot of males kind of said to me, it was only whores get raped. I mean, that was the belief. Eventually, when we did move to McCurtain Street, the chief superintendent at the time, who was quite a right-wing kind of man, coming in and telling us to leave, to pack up and go.
The Rape Crisis Centre, as it was known then. It changed its name to the Cork Sexual Violence Centre in 2004, moved to their new home on McCurtain Street, taking rooms above a shop that were not visible from the street.
You'd have to find it. Now you'd have to really be up and down the streets. Here we go again with the shame that people have to walk up and down the street and up the stairs to find us. Or can we be visible?
That was always Mary's mission, to make it visible. She wanted the Cork Sexual Violence Centre to be visible so we can no longer deny or ignore the reality of sexual violence in Ireland. The building mattered. In 1995, Mary found that visibility in a tall, proud Georgian building on Camden Place in the heart of Cork City.
I remember seeing this building and I fell in love with it. It's no Georgian building. It's right city centre. It's overlooking Patrick's Bridge. I think for me, because I never came from buildings like this, it was just, oh my God, wouldn't that be amazing?
Despite opposition, they set up the centre in the building. While there were tenants there, the building came up for sale with a hefty price tag.
With no money, back then it was kind of City Hall, no way are we helping you out with anything, because I think one upset over our dead body. And we were just seen as radical, we were seen as maybe not want to be involved in the community or hating men, where all we wanted to do was talk about what was going on. There was a lot of offers in at that stage already for people wanting to purchase it, for real money. We didn't have any real money. And then two amazing women came along from law and kind of said, we'll help you, we'll do whatever we can.
These two women were solicitor Mary Lenehan and then barrister, now retired Supreme Court Judge, Marie Baker.
The building was held under a lease due to expire in the late 1990s. The centre would have had the right to a new lease, but it would have been at very large rent. So Mary was determined to keep the building, and I was asked by a friend, Mary Lenehan, who was in fact a solicitor, the solicitor for the centre, plus a member of the board, whether I would join a subcommittee with a view to raising money to purchasing the building. I was reluctant to take on such a task. It seemed impossible, even with all the will in the world, to raise enough money to purchase such a good premises, a large premises, of a beautiful building, in fact. But no one says no to Mary Crilly. In any event, I attended my first meeting of the subcommittee, and on my way home with Mary Lenehan, who lived near me and who unfortunately has died, she was taken untimely early in her life, and she was a woman of great principle and efficiency. On my way home, we were chatting generally about the title and how we would do it and how much money it would need. And I said to her, wonder what the title is. At the time, most of my practice as a barrister was around the landlord and tenant area generally. So I knew a little bit about this. The following morning, with all due efficiency, Mary Lenehan passed me over the title. And to my delight, I saw that the title was an old 20th century lease. And I knew from reading the lease that the building carried with it, as a matter of high probability, a right to acquire the interest of the landlord at a nominal rate. Now, at the time, that legislation was probably little enough known and probably little enough used. But as it happens, again, the serendipity of this, I happened to know about that law and I happened to be on the funding committee. So I was delighted, surprised and delighted. And we immediately moved to make an application to acquire the freehold and all the other intermediate interests. In fact, in the event, we settled the application. We settled it for a very, very good sum. I thought in the negotiation that the landlord, who must have been surprised, and in fact more than surprised, a bit shocked, to see that he was being met with this application in respect of a very good building, a very prominent building, a beautiful old Georgian building in the middle of Cork. But I thought he was not that reluctant. He was not that displeased to be selling it at a nominal rate to the centre run by Mary, because I think he and everyone really in Cork knew how important the work was that she was doing there and how formidable she was and how important the rights she was protecting are. The building is now held with a full freehold title. In other words, the centre owns all the interests. It's not a tenant. It owns the full building. The door is painted purple like Mary's clothes. So I suppose the effect of all of this is that the centre now owns this prominent, visible building in the centre of Cork that keeps the narrative around sexual violence open, a solid place where people can go for comfort, for knowledge, for help, and where research and other work is done by Mary and her team.
So I always feel this building belongs to the people of Cork. But it's amazing. And I mean, even back then, people were saying to me, you know, you've gone over the top. And there's often times in here where I'd sit upstairs and cried because I was still the woman who had two young children who didn't know her arse from her elbow. And but like, this is an amazing, proud structure. It really is. And we own it outright. I can't believe it. You know, and the people working in here over the years, you know, have been amazing. And the ones right now are amazing. They've made the impact.
Mary Quilley's work has been publicly acknowledged. In 2023, she was awarded Freedom of the City of Cork and an honorary doctorate from University College Cork.
Wouldn't have thought it. I remember, like me in school, I was the one who always got belted because I never answered the question or because I was always extremely self-conscious. Yeah, I still am. Wherever, like I was 50 when I went to college because I didn't have the opportunities when I was younger. Or even after I'd got the Freedom of the City, which is still shocked about. I was going up North Main Street one day and this old man who I didn't know, and he told me he was 85, he was really down and out. He said he had a rough life, that he was in Northridge and he was really abused badly. He said, but I just want to say thank you because you speak for me. He felt he was remembered. And things like that give you a lift. You know when they say, what keeps you going? Sometimes just thinking about somebody and thinking, this is for you.
Mary Crilly's work will be remembered, in the words by the poet Paula Meehan.
Paula Meehan, this poem is a zone of sanctuary for Mary Crilly. It is old as the fates the stars above spin, night after night on the face of the heavens, endlessly telling each other their stories. It is newborn each day with its latest version. It says, come forward to childhood, to be cradled, to be dandled, to be held, to be lulled. It falls like rain to parched earth. It fires the seed that waits with patience for its moment to open. It says, you are worthy, deserving of love. This poem is a zone of sanctuary. It will speak the unspeakable. It promises a language to bind body to soul. Its business is truth. Its business is justice. It holds these words as a solemn promise to those shackled in hells of earthly torment. It will carry your witness, a cherished gift. It opens its doors to all who need shelter. It is humbled by your courage when you cross the threshold. It takes your hand, it unclenches your fist, finger by finger. It opens to the light the lines of your future that channel your energy to make yourself whole. This poem is a zone of sanctuary.
Mary Crilly's business is justice, and the building was only the beginning.
She would always be the one that would say, oh God, there's more to be done, like there's more voices to be heard, and help us help those voices.
14th of February, I know, besides being Valentine's Day, is 1 billion rising day, which highlights the fact that 1 billion women in this world will be raped or abused in their lifetime. 1 in 3. Well, the statistics that came out in the Savvy report 20 years ago would say that 1 in 5 girls are raped or abused in this country. Now, recently, this more figures came out, more stats came out, and it's much the same. 1 in 5 girls are raped or abused in this country. I think 1 in 7 boys might be abused as children. In older kind of age, boys and men are more likely to get beaten up than sexually assaulted. And I'd say we'd have a lot of young people coming in because we see from 14 up. When you think about it, it's such a horrific thing to be done to someone.
You know, and it wipes away that lovely feeling that you used to have, that trust, and you're never the same person. And Mary would say it's the start of the healing process when you go in the door of a rape crisis centre. So no matter what next steps you take.
Like if somebody came in today and said that she had been raped or sexually assaulted last night, the first thing we'd try and do is get her into the sexual assault treatment unit for an examination, for a medical, and then we'd organise an initial appointment for counselling. And that always happens within maybe 2 or 3 days of somebody coming in. If anybody's under 18, because we see from 14 up, they're never on a waiting list, because I think if you put a young person on a waiting list, you don't see them for dust, they're gone. So it is counselling and support for survivors of child sex abuse, of rape, of stalking, of sex trafficking, any kind of sexual violence. It's counselling and support, it's court accompaniment, it's going to the guards, it's kind of taking somebody where they're at and seeing what they need.
It's a tough, tough journey to come back. You very rarely will get back your 100%.
And I'd love to get to a stage where people who are abused don't have to keep it a secret anymore. Like if somebody was out in the street and they were beaten up, they can go home and kind of say, this was done to me, this happened. But why should they keep this secret of sexual assault? We're still stuck with that shame and the guilt of the victim. The legacy I'd love to leave would be that there's no more victim blaming. I can't stop the power and control and the abuse, but if somebody was abused or raped and they knew it wasn't their fault, that would really help them kind of live their life better because they're not stuck with that guilt and shame inside them.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what's important to kind of understand about sexual violence is perpetrators are very good at having their victim survivors share the blame of the sexual violence. Because what that does, it makes the victim survivor feel responsible or guilty about the crime. It silences people from coming forward, and that allows the perpetrator to continue to abuse and harm. What we need to help victim survivors realize is that they should not share that shame and blame, and we need to break that cycle. Historically, as people would come to me and say, well, I made a disclosure when I was 10 about what was happening, but people told me to be quiet. People told me, don't be silly, he was a nice guy. People told me, shut up. So how we handle disclosure and how safe we make it for people to come forward changes that victim blaming. And as I said earlier, perpetrators are very good at putting the blame on the victim because it keeps them quiet.
And so having the ability to be the author of your own experience and finding your own voice and speaking with your own voice and making your voice heard, that's so important. Places like the Sexual Violence Center, you know, I wish we could live in a society where that was not needed, but we're a long way from that. But at least there's a place you can go to, and there's a place where people will listen to you, people will believe you. And that is incredibly powerful because it restores trust. In a sense, it restores trust in humanity.
So the power in one brave person coming forward and said, this has been my experience, this happened, that allows other people to come forward, and then they're not alone.
Levina Kerwick embodies that bravery. She was the first person to waver her anonymity after the man convicted of raping her walked free from court. She also helped bring in the victim impact statement into court.
You know, as devastated as I was, I was never going to have my voice heard in court or never going to be able to appeal the leniency of the sentencing. You know, they're legacies that I'm incredibly proud of. And when I hear victims or survivors saying they hand back that guilt and shame in that statement, you're giving it back to the rightful owner. Don't walk out of that court and not hand that guilt and shame back. Give it back in the victim impact statement. Let your voice be heard. Let your words be heard. Now you need to be. As you say, like, you need to be heard and all that. Sometimes victims and survivors, they just want to be. And by that, I suppose I mean, what you first need to do is listen and just be with someone. And being in a centre like Cork Rape Crisis Centre, Dublin or Kilkenny, it's okay, like. Sometimes you don't need to say anything. Sometimes you just need to be. Thanks, Mary. You have been my bee. When I look back, you were the first one to be. So thank you for being with me.
We need to understand the impact, the devastating impact that sexual violence has on a person. It shatters you.
An act of violence destroys or damages the person as an intact or whole entity. That's what you were before the violence. The violence takes it apart. And the fact that the act of violence does not end when the violence stops. And this is a problem with thinking of violence as an act, because an act has a beginning and an end. And so, okay, the violence ended. But actually, the ripples of that violence stay for a very long time. It stays for as long as it takes for that person to regain a sense of bodily and psychological integrity, not in the moral sense, but in this idea of being whole, of being intact, of being one again.
100%. It's more than an act. A man or a woman can assault you or can rape you. And that's their part done. And they will or will not be punished for it. But that will remain with you for the rest of your life. But there's a deep-rooted problem here. Because at some stage, you have to kind of question and query, why is there so much violence happening? Mary would, and I would say, consent is a vital part of teaching. So, like, there's no point really at this stage going round the houses. The future need to be aware of what's right and what's wrong. It's as simple as that. Like, there is no grey area here. It's a yes or a no. Somebody says no, they mean no.
But the prevalence of it is still outrageous. But it's tolerated. It is really tolerated by society. They think it's awful and it needs to change, but they don't take it as seriously as it needs to be. Like the young girls we'd see in here, really strong, kind of great young people, life ahead of them, but they won't go to school anymore because the person who raped or abused them or videoed them is in the same school and he's there with his gang and he's strutting around. Because these days the young boys are videoing what they're doing. It's about power and control and that hasn't changed. The majority of guys you'd meet are appalled by this and won't do it and don't want to do it and wonder how they can change it. And what I'm saying is you can change it by being standing up and being counted and by stopping silent about it. And I know there is a fear from guys that they'll lose their mates or they'll be out of the group. And, like, they've a lot less to lose than the girl who's been, or the young fella who's been raped or abused. So, you know, come on, wake up here. Because I think it is something that we can change if people just stand up and be counted. You know, I mean, I'm really optimistic. I know things changed really slowly over the 40 years, and you feel like not just chipping away at a wall, I'd love to get a crane at it. But things have changed.
We are a long way from where we should be, but we're also so much better than we used to be. And so this idea that things can improve, it takes time, and you can only change things one step at a time. And that's what she does. And she's taken many one steps in the last 40 years.
Chipping away. Like, if you think about on the board now, the chief superintendent who just retired last year, Barry McPolin, he's now on our board. You know, so things have kind of turned around by just trying to bring people along with us rather than isolating them. And we're quite vocal and quite visible. Like, we're really good for campaigns. We're not good on training, so we leave that to Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. You know, the way you have to know your own capacity, but some of the campaigns we've done have been quite successful.
You're listening to Documentary and Drama on News Talk. This is Groundbreaker, Mary Crilly. You're listening to Groundbreaker, Mary Crilly on Documentary and Drama on News Talk. A reminder that sensitive subjects are discussed in this documentary, including sexual violence, and that some listeners may find its content upsetting. And the helpline for the Rape Crisis Centre is free phone 1800 778888.
Not only helping people who are victim survivors of historic sexual violence, but stopping it in its tracks. Let's stop it before it happens. Doing some very proactive work, like their Safer Gigs initiative.
Before COVID, a group of students had come in and they were organising some theatre project. And they came in and they said, we've everything sorted. We've the venue, we've the band, we've everything. What happens around safety? And we said, we don't know. The music industry is huge. Surely there's something in place. And there wasn't. So we started Safe Gigs Ireland. But we no more had to start it. Festival Republic, who run all the big festivals in Ireland, asked us to come along to their festivals and to give us a marquee and have a presence there. All the festivals we go to, my very favourite is Longitude. You have 30,000, they're supposed to be 18-year-olds. You have them there for 2 days and they yap away to you. I love that energy. I love it. Kind of just go over to them and say, bet you're wondering who the Sal one is. And then they really engage with you. So it's about kind of, yeah, keep chatting them wherever way you can.
Safe Gigs Ireland is an initiative to make gigs and nightlife safer for everyone, devising a charter to ensure zero tolerance for sexual violence.
But now this is a charter they all have to have in place and it's part of signing off for their licence.
The other issue that they are actively campaigning on is spiking. Spiking is when someone puts alcohol or drugs into another person's drink or body without their knowledge or consent, and in many cases to make it easier to rape or sexually assault them.
Because we would have met people over the years who have been spiked, and I've no doubt they've been spiked. So it's gone on a long time. So we're at the stage now where we have a spiking hub, but to kind of raise awareness about the prevalence of it. And we're part of the task force in City Council on Nighttime Economy, and they've adopted spiking as part of their action plan, which really gives me lift, because that means, again, this is another group working with us kind of saying, we know this is happening and we're going to back you. So it's when we include everybody, you know, that's when you see changes.
And the variety of campaigns is also very impressive.
Katrina O'Sullivan, Senior Lecturer in Law in University College Cork.
The Fixed It campaign, where newspaper headlines are highlighted as kind of minimising the perpetrator or, you know, distancing the perpetrator from the harm that they have done.
Because I'd seen headlines for years and they annoyed me, but I didn't know we could do something about it. Now, social media helped us do this. If we saw a headline, say, young girl slept with five men in hotel room for drugs, she was aged 15 or something. So we changed that to young girl raped in hotel room, five men, because that's reality. Like, one of the most successful Instagram posts we ever did, this did thousands over a weekend, is translated into about 40 different languages that weekend. It was because it was for perpetrators. If you feel like you're going to rape someone, blow a whistle. You know, all the things that women were told to do, blow a whistle, we were telling them to do. If you feel you're going to do something, tell a friend. It just starkly said, this is how to stop it, by stopping them, and people could see it in black and white. So we have a big campaign then on stalking, which We know we ran at the start with Eve McDowell and Una Ring, who had both been stalked, and we worked with UCC and got some research done, and the law now has changed around stalking. And the Crime Victims Helpline in Dublin refer any cases of stalking to us.
Stalking is a liberty crime. What's meant by that is that it steals your ability to be free. You make yourself smaller. You stop going out into the world, you stop interacting with people in order to protect yourself and also maybe to protect your friends and family, who are often targeted also by the stalker. Really serious impacts in terms of psychological health, well-being. Consequences for the victim are really incredibly serious. And the problem has been that it hasn't been recognised as such. One of the things that is important around introducing a new stalking offence is to enable people to recognise that they are being harmed and that this harm is a criminal offence.
Mary has been involved in a lot of campaigning to change and bring in new legislation around sexual violence in Ireland. In 2006, a young then PhD student, Susan Leahy, came to Mary seeking advice on her PhD studies.
And Mary, kind of in true Mary style, she was like, there's no definition of consent in Irish rape law. There's no definition of consent. No one's talking about it. Will you do a PhD on that? And it took a long time to convince people that actually a definition of consent was something we needed. So at the time, I suppose what lawyers were saying was we didn't need a statutory definition of consent because we had case law that said what consent was.
A campaign began and a legal definition of consent was introduced in the Criminal Law Sexual Offence Act in 2017. The law now states that a person consents to a sexual act if he or she freely and voluntarily agrees to engage in that act. The Criminal Law Sexual Offence Act provides several circumstances where consent cannot be given, including being asleep or unconscious, under force or the threat of force, or being impaired by alcohol and drugs.
Once the definition of consent was there, what I'm still working on is then the juror education piece. That's not discrediting the jury system. I think it's not disrespecting jurors. I think it's just common sense that people do bring their attitudes in. So what mock jury research can help you to do is see, you know, how do people reason? So it's unlikely they're going to sit there and say, well, this is the definition of consent. These are only the facts we've been given in the case. It's unlikely they're not going to hone in on, well, but she was drinking, but they knew each other before, they were in a relationship before. You know, no matter what the law is saying, so there's a whole lot coming in that we still need to tackle. The law has come on a long way. And I think things like support in court is very important. That's all wonderful. At a base level, you have somebody who has to, first of all, wait often a very long time for a case to come to trial. You can't fully close the door on it because you know you're going to have to testify in it. So delay is huge. And then at a base level, you're going into an alien environment that you know nothing about. And you have to stand up then in a court. And even, you know, again, we've wonderful systems now giving evidence by TV link, giving evidence behind the screen, all those things. But you still have to stand up and talk about intensely intimate information about yourself, but also an incident or incidents where you've been highly traumatized and you have to be questioned by two strangers on that. We can do a lot. We can ease a person's journey through the system. We could get the basics a bit more right in terms of we could move them through that process more quickly. We could be a bit more robust on making sure that any unnecessary personal information doesn't get in there. So I have a massive issue with people's counselling records being a part of rape trials. That's just part of the culture now. We have a system to regulate it. It's not working as well as it should be. We need to be looking at that more. We are good, I think, at regulating the use of previous sexual experience evidence. Again, we have no clear studies saying that definitively, yes, that doesn't get in there unless it's absolutely necessary. So we can do those things, but ultimately, for victims of sexual offences, you're never going to eradicate the trauma of going through the system. Another thing, though, I think is for victims, what often gets forgotten is that they're doing a service for the state, providing state evidence for prosecution. They're helping bring someone to justice. And I think sometimes when the trial is over, they can get forgotten then. And so that's one of the things I think as well is that we need aftercare for people.
As Paula Meehan said in her poem, The Zone of Sanctuary, its business is justice. And that is what these campaigns have been fighting for. In 2006, Mary helped set up Cork Against Human Trafficking, a group of organisations and state bodies working collectively to help raise awareness and combat human trafficking, which is happening here in Ireland.
It is an occurrence, yes, particularly for purposes of sexual exploitation. I think there is still a sense that this is something that happens elsewhere to other people, but it's not just people newly arriving. It also affects communities here, children, young women in particular. So there is some awareness, and I think organisations like the Sexual Violence Centre, the work of Cork Against Human Trafficking, Mary Crilly's work and others raised that awareness. We've seen important new legislation in Ireland, but it's still not something that's acknowledged as an everyday occurrence in all parts of Ireland.
This is modern day slavery, and according to the UN, over 50 million people in the world are enslaved.
Literally have been sold, promised work in Ireland, and have been traded over and over again to a buyer, to a pimp. Pimp can kind of say to them, you have a younger sister, don't you? What age is she now? 9 or 10? I know where she lives. She'll be next. So they can kind of keep them trapped in different ways without putting handcuffs on them. If you think about it, it's the criminal element who are involved in this. So if they get the merchandise, they do call them merchandise for free. That's what they do. They buy and sell. Like, there would have been a time where they said guns was the main thing, or drugs, but now it's any kind of humans are number one, because you can reuse them, rebuy them, resell them. Drugs, once you take it, it's gone, and guns, often if it's used, it might be disposed of, but women you can kind of keep rebuying, and there's always a market for them. And it's that black and white. I know this sounds very black and white. That's how they treat it.
This is something that's documented and reported on by the UN. So we see armed groups in situations of conflict. We see criminal organisations recognising that people may be in a vulnerable situation, that children may be in a vulnerable situation, and that there are huge profits to be made, whether it's through sexual exploitation, forced labour, child marriage, exploitation in begging, illegal adoptions. There are all kinds of purposes of exploitation. So yes, it is a fast-growing criminal industry, a multi-billion dollar profit industry as well, and criminal enterprise.
We've only seen a handful compared to what's out there. The ones we've seen have been rescued from brothels, or have been referred from other kind of hospitals. So, but if there was no demand, if the men decided not to do this, and the majority of men don't purchase women, but those who do are keeping the trade going, and they have a responsibility. You know, they've even said to me at times, some of the women we've met, one man was really nice, he said, I remind him of his daughter, I was the same age as her, and he was going out to buy her a birthday present. I mean, it's about how they disassociate, you know, what they've done to this young girl. They don't seem to want to see this is a human being who's on this earth, who has a life, and who deserves a life, and this isn't their choice. And we just really have to, as a society, really knuckle down, look at it straight on, and say, this is happening. And it's really awful to look at, but let's just get together and try and make a change.
We need to be more proactive on prevention. We don't want to be remedying this very serious harm after the fact, so we need to be looking at what are the conditions for migrants who arrive here, for refugees, why they might be particularly at risk. What are we doing in relation to children who arrive here, who may be unaccompanied or separated from families or caregivers? Do we have enough resources in terms of child protection and social work protection? Do we have enough for follow-up and checking what's happening? Much more resourcing, much more mainstreaming. But also, I think importantly, in Ireland and at European levels, recognising the need for assistance and support and long-term assistance to victims of trafficking. First and foremost, for their protection and recovery, and also recognising that they may then be in a better position to participate in a criminal justice investigation process. Assistance and protection should not be conditional on that, because that is a right and should be a remedy for victims in and of itself.
And that is the work of Mary Crilly. Working in collaboration, her business is justice, to show us the injustice. Over the last few years, Mary, Lavina and Katrina Toomey of Cork Penny Dinners have been campaigning to open a sanctuary for homeless people who have been sexually assaulted.
I read a statement that Mary said, which was, I've never met a homeless woman who hasn't been raped.
Yeah. You know, and if you think about that in your mind, a woman that's homeless will present herself at a sexual assault clinic and they'll go through it all. And just let it sit with you now for a minute. Do all the tests, say they've been raped. When all that's done, we'll put you back in the spot that you were raped in. Make that make sense. I think, you know, a safe place for women after they're raped on the streets to go to, so that they would be able to shower, so that they would be able to sleep in a bed and not fear. You know, because I don't want to be graphic, but there is a lot of blood after you're raped. There's bruising and there's huge damage done internally and externally. You're not going to heal if you're put back in the same spot that you were raped in. There has to come a time that we realise that rape, sexual assault, trafficking is just off the scales here. You know, you have to open your eyes and see, like, what's going on.
It's the people out there who are changing it. Every person who talks about it, every person who thinks, I can't make a little difference, they are making a difference. And then you see small changes, you think, you know, let's try one more. Let's see where we get. I think that's what keeps me going. I think in lots of ways, it's been a privilege being here. I'd love another 40 years. Now that at this stage, I'd love another 40, kind of kick to touch, but that's not going to happen. Like, I'm 70 next year, so that's not going to happen.
And it's amazing if you think about the level of trauma story Mary must have heard in the last 41 years and before that, that she has this incredible ability to, although she hears the dark, she sees the light. She has this incredible hope and vision of what can be. That's an amazing ability to hold both the dark and the light at the same time. And she does that with incredible wisdom and reflection.
I think we undervaluate hope in society or in general. It is a powerful motivating force. Nothing would get done if we didn't have hope that things can improve and can change.
And despite the darkness Mary Crilly has seen, she sees hope. She sees hope in the proud Georgian building with its purple door overlooking St. Patrick's Bridge. And she sees hope in the young people that she works with.
The Safe Gigs campaign, we've also started Safe Gig sessions. And we've had some amazing nights in here. There's this amazing young group, Mishnock, look them up. And this group of young women who wrote their own stuff about body image and all sorts of stuff.
Hi, I'm Sophie from Mishnock, and over the course of Mishnock being together, Mary Crilly has been one of our biggest supporters, from being front row to see us at Electric Picnic to having us for a Safe Gig session in the Sexual Violence Centre. We are really inspired by the work Mary does and are empowered by the impact she has. We are grateful to have her support on our music, specifically the song you are about to hear, which is called Shane Through. It's a song about building yourself up and not letting anyone dictate your life.
Boxing game. celebrated, stay motivated, we're educated. So elegant, intelligent in my element. Tell the world about it. Love yourself, don't you hesitate. Let the people see the love resonate.
Don't know if you have heard, we run the world. Think we're weak, don't be absurd. Expand your mind, your judgment's blurred.
Call it out, take a stand, see your privilege. Do it for your sisters and mothers and just start listening. I'm alright with him.
Groundbreakers Mary Crilly is a Curious broadcast production funded by Commission Le Mans with a television licence fee. Produced and narrated by Patricia Baker. Final mix, Brian Fleming, Context Studio. And music score by Jerry Horn.
And if you have been affected by anything discussed in this programme, you can contact the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre on their national 24-hour helpline, 1-800-77-8888.